Angry crowds in Pakistan describe Raymond Davis as a spy and a murderer who ought to be hanged in public. President Obama describes him as an accredited American diplomat who should be released now in accordance with international law. Pakistan's weak civilian government seems unwilling to defy outraged public opinion. An angry U.S. Congress could cut off American foreign aid, even though that might risk the logistical lifeline that supports the war in Afghanistan. Washington Post columnist David Ignatius suggests there may be a way for both sides to resolve the issue quietly. Blood money. David Ignatius joins us here in Studio 3A. He's an associate editor and columnist for The Washington Post. Thanks very much for coming in.
Great to be here, Neil.
And before we get to a possible resolution, what do we know about this case? The details seem very murky.
It's a strange case. Raymond Davis was in Pakistan. He'd been making trips to Pakistan, I'm told, since 2008 on a number of different visas. At the time that he was arrested on January 27, we now know that he was a contractor for the CIA doing missions in Lahore and elsewhere in Pakistan that are still a bit murky. He was arrested after shooting and killing two Pakistanis who he said were trying to steal money from him. There's some question about just who they were and how they came to be following him. After his arrest, the question of whether he qualified for diplomatic immunity, like a typical diplomat in an embassy, who, if he gets caught committing a crime, cannot be tried under the laws in the courts of the country where he is a diplomat, but is expelled, sent home, and then sometimes is tried there. That's been the U.S. argument. The Pakistanis have resisted that. The evidence about what Davis was doing, about the paperwork that was filed on his behalf, is confused, to put it mildly. There's evidence that on a list that was submitted just before his arrest, his name was not included in a list of people submitted to the Foreign Office for diplomatic cover, as it were, that the name was then added a day or two after he was arrested. Like all the details in this, I suspect we'll have to wait until there's some formal proceeding to be absolutely sure.
The President of the United States, though, at a news conference said, "This man is an accredited diplomat. Pakistan knows that. He ought to be released now."
It has been so stated by the President of the United States, by the State Department, by all official U.S. authority, that this man is a diplomat. And so by declaration, by assertion, he is that, and we're claiming those rights for him. We've asked that Pakistan release him and warned that if he is not released, if he's not treated as a diplomat, there will be consequences. Pakistani diplomats in Washington were informed of that in the first days after this crisis.
The United States provides billions of dollars in aid to Pakistan.
The United States provides billions of dollars of aid to Pakistan. Pakistan is, on one level, a crucial ally in the war against terrorism. We cooperate with the Pakistani Intelligence Service, the fabled ISI, in operations. In another sense, there are many people who argue that ISI shelters people who at least have connections to the terrorists that we're looking for. So it's a very problematic relationship. A friend of mine observed when this crisis was beginning that if this was a married couple, if you were looking at the CIA and the ISI, you would say these two need a divorce. Their relations are so stormy. Every few months there's some terrible crisis. One month we're shooting Pakistani soldiers across the border with our helicopters, and they're burning our trucks on the way to the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. Another month it's the Raymond Davis case. The relationship is a mess, and yet it seemed to me, and I travel often to Pakistan, that these two countries really do need each other, and that somehow they've got to figure out a way to be more honest with their publics and get out of this recurring mess.
Well, ISI says one of the things that should come out of this, according to your article, is that they should be treated a little bit better by the United States, which should not have these rogue operations underway in their country, and should tell Pakistan who's working for the CIA and who isn't.
The ISI feels dissed. They say, you term us a key ally, and yet with key allies, you make a practice, you, the CIA, make a practice of declaring to the host intelligence service who your officers are. There's a formal process in which the chief of station and other officers are declared, and there's an understanding that the CIA will not run what's called, what are called unilateral operations against the host country. We have agreements like that, formal, informal, with Britain, France, Israel. In the old days with Egypt, it was understood we weren't going to do any spying in Egypt either. It ended up causing us a lot of trouble because we didn't have enough contacts there. The ISI would like that kind of understanding. They demanded it as the price of settling the Raymond Davis case. In my column, I quoted a senior U.S. official, not otherwise identified, saying this is the kind of thing we would be prepared to discuss with the ISI, but in private, please, it's a sensitive matter.
And in private, the United States might say, at the same time, we would like the Pakistanis not to reveal publicly the identities of CIA officers, which they are alleged to have done, and at the same time we would like the ISI to provide information on those Taliban and Al-Qaeda people it's protecting.
There is a growing body of opinion in the United States that the ISI is not, whatever its claims, a reliable intelligence partner, that there are too many things they keep from us, that there are too many instances in which they appear to be playing double games, in which they shelter people who we have reason to believe are threatening our soldiers in Afghanistan. The whole question of where Osama bin Laden and his key deputies who were hiding out, we think, somewhere in the territory of Pakistan, where they are, why we don't get more help on that, these are recurring, nagging problems. People then say, well, okay, so suppose we broke off our relationship with the Pakistanis, what would we do then? And there's not a good answer to that either.
And any glance at a map will show you that any lifeline of logistical support for the war in Afghanistan has to run either through Pakistan or Iran. Take your choice.
It's very interesting, Neil, that General Petraeus, our commander in Afghanistan, has been the leading advocate of what he calls the Northern Supply Route to Afghanistan, which involves primarily air flights going over Russia to the stans, the former Soviet republics north of Afghanistan, which provides an alternative route so that we wouldn't need Pakistan as desperately as we do now. You mentioned another route that has its own problems, namely through Iran. But Petraeus, I think, looking ahead and uneasy about the dependence on Pakistan, has really pushed for this northern supply route. We're now moving
as enormous. An alternative. I don't think anybody argues the war in Afghanistan could be supported by an air bridge.
I actually have heard in the last 2 weeks, as people got more and more worked up about the Davis case, the argument that we do need to show Pakistan that there are alternatives. That there
That's are, a lot a of gas to fly
which,
a long way.
It's a lot of gas, but you could argue that come July, the numbers of people we'll need to support will be declining. I think what bothers people is this feeling that Pakistan has us over a barrel and that they keep upping the pressure, thinking that we don't have an alternative. I did, as you mentioned at the outset, I talked in this column about an ancient tribal alternative, and we can talk about that in a moment.
We're talking with David Ignatius, Washington Post Associate Editor and columnist. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. So, the way out.
The way out that I described in this column is, you could argue, the traditional method for resolving bitter disputes including murder in the tribal areas of Pakistan and other traditional parts of Pakistan. And that's known as blood money. The word in Pashto, I think, is saz. And it essentially involves a payment of money from those responsible for the killing to the families of the victims that is meant as compensation, but also as a way of restoring the balance of honor and dignity between the wounded and those who've caused the wound. I think it's something that we don't understand enough about that part of the world, that so much about resolving disputes depends on your ability to preserve the dignity of the wrong party. You can't settle a conflict between unequals, it's argued. So this idea of blood money involves payment. It sounds quite primitive, unsettling to us, but that is how disputes get resolved, and it's argued in this case we ought to be figuring out some way to pay money as soon as possible to the families of those killed by Raymond Davis.
Whatever you call it, compensation is not unusual in such circumstances. We're talking a lot about Libya. Of course, Libya paid a lot of compensation to the families of those killed aboard Pan Am 103, and that was part of resolving their dispute with the West.
It's true. In our legal system, we have damages. We have torts. This whole legal science or art of figuring out how you compensate people, what's a lost arm worth, what's a leg worth. So we shouldn't act as if this is completely foreign to us. In this case, to use this as a way of resolving this problem before it gets to court, once it gets to court and is taken over by the lawyers, basically forget it. But in this case, if you could get an intermediary, let's say, you know, the King of Saudi Arabia, just to grab a name out of the air, or one of the ruling sheikhs of the United Arab Emirates, who could sponsor this process, who could invite the victim's family to come to the Gulf, come to the holy places, and then begin a discussion that maybe you'd find a way to resolve the unresolvable.
And this would then be, if the families accept the payment, this would be then moot. They would drop the murder charges.
I am told that in a Pakistani court, if the family had agreed to this traditional blood money settlement, that the murder charge would be moot. There might be other charges. I should note that in the last few days, the families have said that they don't want to accept American money, and maybe they're bargaining. Maybe they really don't want to accept it. But
maybe they've come under pressure.
Yes. The problem is everything in Pakistan is so politicized. The real problem is that anti Americanism has been allowed by the government, by every element of the ruling elite, to grow and grow. It's now so big that it worries everybody, but nobody can figure out a way to stop it.
And if this does go to trial, and that's scheduled to happen March 14th, what happens then?
Well, once it gets into court, the lawyers, and in Pakistan, the lawyers' movement is a growing expression of a middle-class desire to not have their lives ruled by the ISI, the intelligence service, or the army, or the corrupt politicians, but by lawyers. So the lawyers will get very involved in this, and they'll want to ask questions. Who authorized these visas? How is it that Raymond Davis came to this country six times? What's the ISI been doing? And so you can understand that there are a lot of Pakistani interest groups, powerful groups, that get nervous when they think about that trial.
And if, of course, he's convicted and sent to life in prison or worse, well, things could get very difficult then.
Yes, and the danger of him being killed while he was in prison would be enormous. It's a very, very difficult one. And I think at some point after the resolution of his personal case, we really need to ask questions about what have CIA officers, U.S. contractors, DOD personnel, what have people been doing in Pakistan? It's a reasonable question to ask. The Pakistanis are upset about it, but so should we be.
David Ignatius, an associate editor and columnist for The Washington Post. You can find a link to his column, U.S. Pakistan Could Use a Muslim Ritual to Resolve Raymond Davis Case, at our website. Go to npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. David, good to speak with
you. Thank you, Neil.
Tomorrow, Frank Luntz joins us to talk about the key phrases that can make a candidate or a corporation. His new book is called Win. Join us for that. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.